Welcome to the UFO Files Show with your host, Jerry Pippin.
Bill Hamilton, here we are in Laughlin, and you're going to actually speak here today, I think.
Yes, that was a surprise to me, but I've been invited to give a special presentation during the lunch hour, so...
That's fantastic. You know, it's the anniversary of the Phoenix Lights coming up. And
tomorrow.
And you have the book. We're going into Phoenix tomorrow and talk to a few people. And so I thought it would be fitting, and we appreciate you taking the time to drop by, to talk about your book, and you're really the expert on it. And you have a CD or a DVD or something coming up, do you?
Well, I have a CD with some clips on it. We haven't produced anything with it yet. This
okay.
is the book. I'm putting it out here to show you. I know
right,
our audience
right,
can't
right.
see it.
Right.
It's called The Phoenix Lights Mystery. It was the last book that I had published. It's available on Amazon.com for anybody who's interested.
And it's pretty incredible. Let's talk about the Phoenix Lights. In 1997, how did you get involved, I guess?
I was at work in Scottsdale, Arizona on March 13th when I received an email from somebody who was trying to get in contact with me. And I received the email on my workstation, and I replied, have him call me at home. And I got a call when I got home that evening, and this man lived in a place called Ahwatukee. It's about 20 miles south of Phoenix proper, and it's almost in line with Sky Harbor Airport, south
okay.
of there, and
okay.
it is just north of the Estrella Mountain Range, and there's also an Indian reservation out there. At any rate, he said that he had been seeing these strange lights and videotaping them for the past 3 nights, and he wanted me to come out and take a look at them, at the videotape. And I said, certainly, I'll try to get down there tonight, and I'd like to bring my video camera in case they show up again. He said, it could be, they could show up again, so bring your video camera. Well, that particular night, it just so happens that Dr. Stephen Greer was in town.
Okay.
And we went to dinner with Stephen, and because he was trying to put together some video footage. During the time that we were having dinner, the first major UFO event of that night occurred. It was between 8 and 8:30. And we were unaware of it, but close to 8:30, I felt very anxious, and I said, we have to get down to this guy's house, it's getting late. And I had a friend of mine with me, Tom King, and we went in separate cars, and I had directions. We took this convoluted course. We wound up at this man's house, and he had the doors wide open, and all of the neighbors were just going in and out of his house as if it were the mall. And we said, there must be something going on here that they're interested in. And I asked for him by name. Oh, he's over here. I introduced myself. He took us upstairs. I said, I'd like to see where you saw these lights from. Take us to the observation point.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And he said, on the bedroom balcony, it overlooks the Estrella Mountains. So we went up there, then we came down to a television set, and he put in a cassette and showed us his recordings. And then we said, well, we'd like to go back upstairs again. And we did. It was closing in, it was about 10 minutes, about 9:50, 10 minutes before 10 o'clock that night. And somebody on the balcony, one of the neighbors, yelled, there's one now, and pointed toward this brilliant, it looked to me like pure gold, amber gold light,
uh-huh.
right? It looked like it had a coherent color scheme. Just like a laser creates coherent light.
Yes.
In other words, it wasn't dispersed throughout the spectrum. And somebody said, what is that? Is it on the mountain, above the mountain? And I said, it's too dark to tell. There's about a half moon out tonight. had my video camera. Tom and I went and got our video cameras. My video camera died on me. I didn't get any footage. So Tom said, I'll share my footage with you. And he gave me his telescope to look through. So I was one of the few that looked at these lights through a Celestron telescope. It had a 90 millimeter objective lens with 25 power, and I got a good view of the light, and I saw a perfectly round, it looked like round as a dime light about the size of the full moon that you see with the naked eye,
and
through the telescope, and it stayed centered for about a minute.
Could you make out anything other than that? Was there any detail with the light?
No detail, except it seemed to have a pulsation. There was no smoke, no fire, no planes in the vicinity.
So you saw it through the telescope.
Right.
And this said, this had to be, everybody was seeing this in Phoenix, really. I mean, a lot of people.
Well, people saw that, but mainly what was reported was the flyover of this huge craft looking like this one on my book cover.
Yes, uh-huh.
At about somewhere between 8:15 and 8:30. Depending on where you were in the city.
And right? You were inside at a restaurant eating.
Right. So I missed what was called the main event.
Uh-huh.
Right. However, I discovered soon the news broke out about on local television the next day, and we organized a research team consisting immediately of Jim Dellatoso, Mike Tanner, and myself at Village Labs on the next day. By May, we were still going at it. We were still gathering. We were interviewing witnesses. We found out that there were many events that occurred that night, and originally I thought there were about 5 events. That expanded into 10 events, so we know now that there were at least 10, maybe a dozen events all on the same day. There were over 300 phone calls to the National UFO Reporting Center in Seattle, Washington. There were at least 6 videotapes of the 10 o'clock lights. Thousands of witnesses called the local television station and the police. They also called Luke Air Force Base out in Glendale, Arizona.
Actually, local television in Phoenix had some footage of some of this, didn't they?
Of the 10 o'clock lights, right. But not of the
objects. Not of the main event.
Not of the main event. Nobody caught the main event.
Wow.
In fact, a lot of people said, well, I was going to point my camera at it, but it was too close and too big, and I would only caught a portion of it. Now, the first main event was either a formation or a structured object. We now think it was a structured object, a boomerang of 6 or 7 lights. It was about a mile in span. Its travel vector was from the northwest part of the state to the southeast. It traveled over the Phoenix area about the speed of a blimp. But everyone described its motion as if it were gliding, like a skater on ice. No noise. Its altitude was below 5,000 feet. The color of the lights was white.
White.
They were white.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now.
And we're talking about the main event right now, event number one. Right.
But I discovered there was 2 main events.
Aha.
There was event 2. It was a black triangular form. At first, I got a report it was larger than a jumbo jet. Actually, it was a jumbo jet could have landed on this thing.
It was that big.
It is the biggest black triangle report I have ever seen. This thing is estimated by somebody who was in real estate, who was a witness, and was property. There was this property up near Scottsdale. This passed over Scottsdale.
Okay.
So it was on the east side. And she knew the exact distance between 2 parallel streets was 1.8 miles. The tips, the triangular tips, overhung at 1.8 miles, so this is estimated to be over 10,000 feet in span.
That's gigantic.
It also had, just like these lights we saw, these amber lights,
yes,
which we called orbs because they looked round,
uh-huh,
they were docked in the edges, the leading edges of this black triangular form. It's actually a deltoid form because it's three-dimensional.
Uh-huh.
But it has a thin thickness. It's very wide, but not very high. Now, it was moving straight north to south along the East Valley, so it passed over Scottsdale, and it passed over cities to the south, going toward Oro Grande. The color of the lights on it were white, except for the orbs, which were the same color, amber, and one of them detached and was deployed into the environment. It shot to the west, and later the witness said it came back and redocked. This was low enough to reflect the ground lights, and it had all of these little rectangular panels.
Little panels on the bottom you're talking about.
Right, little panels that have been reported in other sightings.
Of course, almost two miles in size. They're not little, probably.
Not little, but it has light at each vertex of the triangle, white lights. But this light in the center is bigger, and it's reddish, like it's a power source.
Right, right.
Here are the orbs. They're docked in the edges here, and one of them
left.
Went that way.
Uh-huh.
It also put out, one witness reported it put out a beam of light that penetrated the ceiling in her room. It went right through the house.
Wow. Just lit up the room, huh?
Or
at least you could see it coming.
It went right
walls.
By a birdcage.
Well, it was a narrow light then.
It was almost like a laser beam,
I guess.
Right. Uh-huh. And it was just traveling, you know, under the object. I have an illustration of what it might have looked like here.
You know, when you talk about that, Bill, it's amazing. The Air Force thinks they could pass that off as flares.
Well, no, they weren't trying to pass that off as flares. They were trying to pass off this event at 10 o'clock as flares.
Okay.
Because all we caught were lights, these amber lights.
Yeah.
Is what I'm trying to show here. And I finally have evidence that they weren't flares, and they did not match the type of flare. See, I filed an FOIA request with the National Guard, the Air National Guard, at a national level. I finally got a reply from them. I got information from them. And there is no doubt about it. I called the manufacturer of the flares that are used and dropped by the A-10s on the Barry Goldwater test range. And these flares are called LU-2 flares. They're magnesium flares. Their intention is to illuminate the ground below the A-10s, because the A-10s are tank busters. They fly at low level. And they want to illuminate the ground so troops maneuvering at night can see what they're doing. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they're extremely bright. They glow and illuminate. These things were not bright.
Yeah, you described them in a manner that they didn't hurt your eyes at all to look at.
No, but they were brilliant, but not blinding.
Right.
See? Okay, we also had, close to Luke Air Force Base earlier in the evening, two large globes, light with red pulsing rings that were seen by a truck driver that was coming down Highway 17 from Flagstaff into Glendale, Arizona, near Luke Air Force Base, north to south. He said he saw three jets immediately take off on an intercept course for one of these globes.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as they got close to the globe, it took off straight up.
Just went
rapid acceleration.
Shot up.
Straight up. There was also three large luminescent white globes hovering over Fountain Hills on the east side. And the black triangle was also visible while these globes were visible.
Now, the black triangle, did it transverse the city or just?
It came from north of Scottsdale to crossing Scottsdale, Chandler, to points due south.
Okay.
Okay. We had determined after extensive investigation that these UFOs were truly unidentified because they were not identifiable as a member of a known class of objects. They were truly unconventional because they did not behave like a conventional aircraft or natural object, and they were unknown because its origin, their nature and their origin were unknown.
Were you ever to find out if something that huge would have had to show up on somebody's radar, you would think?
They said nothing showed up on radar. We filed an FOIA request to obtain the radar tapes from Sky Harbor Airport.
Yes.
But by the time we filed it, we found out they erased the tapes because they write over them.
Yes, sir.
So we were too late on getting it.
Yeah, we don't use them again and
right.
again.
But it did.
You would think, though.
The boomerang object crossed over the eastern part of the flight path, approach flight path. Now, here's another object a lot of people don't know about. Also, that same night, but it was around 10:30 at night, was another triangle with this indentation in the back part of it here.
Yeah, but see,
it was seen again about a month later.
In the same area?
Near the same area.
Uh-huh.
So, graphic artist had this sighting. And
now in your book, do you have some of these things? Or are you going to put
Yeah. They're in here.
Yeah, okay, fine.
And I took this because this is a huge triangle here that somebody else did. I used this, transferred it to the Phoenix sighting here, which shows the panels on it, right? Now, here's another drawing. It was sent to me, faxed to me by Linda Howe from a resident that was north of Phoenix at 8:45 p.m. She spotted the triangle. Also talked to a witness on the phone who spotted the triangle, said it went right by the moon at extremely high speed. So at some point,
so it sped up from the blimp speed to something
to about jet speed and slowed down again.
Uh-huh.
Okay, then
that's pretty amazing, being that big, and it's just incredible. Have things like that been back since then? I mean, you mentioned the other.
Yes, there have been returns of different objects. This is a report in the Tucson newspaper that came out about the Maryland Air National Guard unit that came to Arizona, and they were trying to explain the lights. But what's interesting in this newspaper article from Tucson is that they said that the A-10s had dropped their flares and come back to base before 8:30 at night, while everyone was trying to explain the 10 o'clock sighting.
Right, right. And that had to be an awfully slow flare.
So here is a report given to me by Trick Johnston, who was a retired airline pilot who saw another object around 10:30, that seemed to be a circle of these amber lights that was immense, over a mile in diameter. And he also saw this from his vantage point in Scottsdale. His son was with him. I'm just passing through some things. We got a very unusual, and here's from the Arizona Republic, June 25th. Now that was months later. It says, Air Force won't address the Arizona question. Like, we're not interested in the mystery lights over the Valley of the Sun, right? While we were doing our investigation in 1997 at the building where Village Labs was housed, a courier arrived from the Motorola Corporation, and they sent us this, which was a scenario, intergalactic scenario. And you notice there's no markings of Motorola, no names of engineers on here, and all statements are made with certainty about what happened over Phoenix, and they called it an intergalactic scenario. They did not say, oh, this was just a secret airplane. They did not say, like some people said, they came up with all kinds of strange explanations. Somebody lit fire balloons. Oh, these were light lights, special halogen lights that were mounted on airplanes. None of this panned out.
What was their intergalactic scenario? What did they think?
Well, it's very interesting because they said the aliens generate a series of controlled micro black holes that are contained and controlled using gravitic forces and highly advanced technology, and that there was a corresponding set of micro white holes, which we saw as the orbs, generated in the target volume of space under gravitic control. These white holes are linked to the micro black holes from the home system. The black holes absorb matter and energy. The aliens are able to modulate and control the matter and energy that appears the white holes. In effect, a path from the home system to the Earth is generated. This path is maintained using gravitic control, control of gravity, in position and time. That's a whole new can of worms relative to the target Earth. And then we see the materialized object. Well, in this case, they showed the V shape, the chevron shape.
Mm-hmm.
And how? Because of the gravity field around the object, that looking up at the object, we see a distortion of the structure. There's a wavy field around the structure because the light from the stars is bent by the gravity waves operating among the light structure.
This
is what they sent to us, and I said, well, this is very interesting.
It certainly is.
But we couldn't go back and ask questions because we don't know who it came from.
Yeah, right.
It was delivered by special courier.
Do you and it was from Motorola themselves?
Yeah, from somebody at Motorola.
Right, right.
Who?
So somebody's aware of this and worked on this.
Right.
Probably.
We also had at one of our meetings, our investigation meetings, a mysterious person showed up. He was wearing the rank of a colonel, and he seemed to know a lot about it. And I asked, "Who are you?" Because nobody introduced him. He introduced himself, and I said, "Well, who do you work for?" And he simply said, "The company." And I said, "What company?" And he looked at me like, "Where did you come from?"
Yeah.
And he said, "The
company." Right. Yeah.
And I said, "Well, what are these?" And that's when he said, "You don't want to know."
Yeah. He wouldn't answer the question. Have you gotten any closer to a scenario on it? On what it might be?
No, I haven't. To this day, I just say there were unidentified flying objects over Phoenix on March 13, 1997. They flew in using unconventional aerodynamics, if they were using aerodynamics at all. And they were completely unknown. We don't know who made them, who flew them, or why they were there. But we do know why there were a lot of witnesses available to observe them, because it just so happens that on that particular night, people were advised to go outdoors and look toward the northwest, which is where this object came from, at the comet Hale-Bopp, clearly visible in the northwest sky.
You think there's a correlation there?
I think there is, in the fact that they somehow used that like an anchor point in the sky. They knew people were going to be out looking at it, so they said, "We'll come out of the direction they're looking at."
Yeah.
Whoever came out of that direction.
I appreciate it, everything, Bill. It's great to see you, and you're looking good. And, you're the man that we wanted to talk to set up the show on the Phoenix Lights, and we appreciate you taking the time.
Well,
to do
thank
it.
You very much, okay. Jerry. I appreciate that.
And we'll talk to you later.
Okay.